You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Thank you guys for joining us on episode 44 of the Reinvest Podcast, where Seth and I get to show you how to maximize your life through the power of real estate investing. You know, I think going through kind of why we're doing this, maximize your life. Everybody's got a why, and really wealth, real estate, it's really a servant of those things and that bigger purpose. So we just got off another podcast earlier today, really emphasizing the why behind why what you do and understanding that. And sometimes you think it's clear, but you have to kind of reevaluate and do an audit to see if you're really on track with your why. And making sure that you're in control of real estate and real estate's not in control of you. So
it's easy to get stuck in the grind. So, but today we're joined by a special guest. We have Kathy Fetke. Kathy, how are you doing?
Great. And wow, I love your opening. That is so spot on. That's the name of our company is Real Wealth. And we really define it as having both the time and the money to live life the way you want. Sometimes people forget about wanting the free time. They get obsessed.
Are you familiar with Julie Holly? Have you heard that name?
No.
Okay. So Julie, a good friend of ours, and just got in connection with her in the last year, kind of putting a spin on financial freedom and instead coining it as personal freedom and making that distinguishment between the two. It seems subtle, but words matter, right? Because they're a reflection of our beliefs. So,
because you can be financially free, but like, what you're saying, your time is gone and you're like a slave to your investments and whatever you're doing. And, you know, money's great, but if you don't have any time with your family, it's kind of, it's all meaningless. So,
and kind of on that note, Real Wealth Network, the Real Wealth Show, you and your husband, Rich, have been kind of in the real estate investing space for how many years?
We've been investing 26 years now, starting with our primary residence that we bought when we first got married and ended up turning into a fourplex. And so and that kind of covered the cost. But our company, Real Wealth, has been around, this is our 20-year anniversary, actually.
Oh, congrats. Yeah.
Did you guys do anything special to celebrate? It's like your business anniversary.
Yeah, it is a business anniversary. Well, our personal anniversary, which was 26 years, he took me hella skiing. Which, you know, I think that was one of those anniversary gifts for him.
Guys would never do that, you know.
It was crazy, but I survived. But for our company 20-year anniversary, yeah, we're planning a big party sometime this fall.
Very cool. You have to look back and celebrate those things. It's easy to get in the grind and kind of lose sight of like how far you've come, you know, because there's always something next. Always another goal on the horizon to tackle. But get into that, the real wealth, get into talking about the mindset behind that, the content, what shaped you guys to get to that point to help other people find real wealth and why real wealth?
Sure. I mean, it came from a place of desperation, honestly. 20 years ago, Rich was diagnosed with melanoma. He had been a big bodybuilder in the 80s and 90s. And with that came a lot of tanning and the, you know, this tanning beds and stuff. And he's a redhead. And for some reason, he didn't connect that maybe tanning and burning
your
skin.
Should have connected with me.
Yeah. So he ended up, you know, noticing some freckles in 2003 that it turned out it was melanoma. And, you know, they cut it out. But back then, you know, medical, especially cancer treatments, have come a long way since then. But that back then, it was really a death sentence to get melanoma. It was the fastest growing skin cancer. And when they did more tests, they thought it had spread to his liver, told him he had 6 months to live. So this is when I just had our second child. We had just bought a big 4,000 square foot home. His career was really taking off. He was a business and personal coach and had just come out with a book called Extreme Success, kind of comparing his extreme sports to what it takes to overcome fear in life, to go after the things you want. So he was on a national book tour when he noticed these freckles. It's like being in the top of, you know, just the top of your game and then suddenly feeling like you fall off that, you know, king of the mountain. Remember that king of the mountain game where you just sort of like pull you right off? And it was like just immediate, oh my gosh, Now so what?
What were you doing for your kind of, your endeavors in Tangent when he was doing that?
I was a stay-at-home mom. I had been in broadcasting. That was my background. But when I had my second child, I just didn't want to be chasing fires and murderers anymore and being in the stress of that environment. Yeah. I just wanted to raise my children. So it had been a few years that I hadn't really been in the working world. So that was really scary for me. It's really hard for stay-at-home moms to kind of find their place back in the work world because it changes so quickly. But, you know, I didn't have a choice. Now, it turns out the good news is the doctor was wrong and he is healthy and alive today, 20 years later. So thank goodness for that. Yes. But at the time, we didn't know. I just had to figure out what to do. But I still had this weekend radio show. This was before podcasts on Saturdays that I would just kind of do little news stories and stuff. It wasn't, I wouldn't say it was a highly revered show. It was just something I was able to kind of stay in the industry once, and I didn't put a whole lot into it. But all of a sudden I thought, well, gosh, you know, I've got this platform. Maybe I should use that to find out how people make money and specifically passive income. Because if the doctor was right, I wanted to be home for him, for Rich. And I also wanted to be home raising my children at a time like this. So I thought, you know, I've heard of this thing called passive income. I don't know anyone who has it. I don't know anything about it, but I can use my platform to learn. And that, again, this was kind of before podcasts, before the information was out there. It was a secret. But it was shocking how many people I could interview and they would share with me how they did it and share their success. Yeah.
Well, and some people are like, what was before a podcast?
Exactly.
The radio.
Well, what it was late night TV. You know, it was these RIA groups, real estate investor groups, where you know, you'd have people up on the stage in their fancy suits trying to sell you product, running
Carlton
to the back
Sheets,
of the room.
Kind of the OG real estate investor guys selling the course. And
it was all that, and you'd run to the back and pay 10 grand to get some outdated information. It was really, really hard to get information back then. That's why this information age should not be underestimated. It was hard to get real information. I mean, when I was young, you couldn't even find out what was for sale. You know, it was only the real estate agents who had a book. It was like there was no internet, you guys. This is how old I am. There was no internet. The only way you could find out what real estate was for sale was through a real estate agent who had a book.
So when I wanted to get on today, I was like, I got to be really careful here because I really want to dive into, you guys are veterans and you've been in the space for a long time, especially compared to people who are new to the scene. And I was like, how do I call somebody a veteran without making them feel old? Because we saw you guys at the Best Ever Conference this last year.
Yeah.
And you guys look great. You're healthy. You've got good energy. You know, it seems like you're really still pushing the plow forward in your business. So it doesn't seem like you're slowing down by any stretch of the imagination, yet you have that experience that you're compounding off of. So yeah, I it's interesting to hear your perspective about what things were like, because I was talking to my coworker today. We forget so easily what things used to be like. And that's why the proverbial history repeats itself, because people don't learn. So what would you, do you think it's hard for people to appreciate the accessibility of information if that was normal for you? Like, you experienced the day and age when that was not normal. So do you feel like you've got almost a better relationship with what's available to you now?
Well, first I'll say that people call me a pioneer. And the first time I heard that, I was kind of mad, but now I accept it.
Yeah, typically it's a compliment. So, I mean, why were you angry when you heard that?
I'm like, wow, that sounds so old. A pioneer? Are you kidding?
Yeah, like Oregon Trail type stuff. Yeah,
exactly. But now, you know, I actually really, this is a great place to be in. It feels like a time of wisdom. You know, I've learned a lot and I'm happy to share it. So the information age is exciting. I'm a little jealous that your age group, that your generation has more information at your fingertips than the US government had when I was young. Wow. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah, that's true. That's a crazy perspective.
Huh. You know, and that's why when I started Real Wealth, I was so disgusted by the real estate groups that were just sleazy. You know, they were just taking money from people. And I thought, I'm going to call it Real Wealth. Like, we're going to get real people here to teach, to show you how they built wealth. And
instead of profiteering, actually empowering.
empowering. And I wanted nothing. I had nothing to sell. It turns out that I did need money. So I ended up getting sponsors for the Real Wealth Show. That's how I brought in cash. And my sponsor ended up being a mortgage broker. And the shows that we did with his clients, you know, how they were borrowing money and to buy real estate and fix and flip it or burr it. That wasn't really a term back then, but basically to fix it up, renovate it, mm-hmm. increase the value and right. refinance it, get all your money back out. These were things that I was learning back then from the mortgage broker who was my sponsor. And then it was so interesting to our audience that it worked. He ended up getting so much business that he said, you know, wow. I really think you should go get your license and become a mortgage broker and help me with all this business. So that is kind of how I got into that side of
it. Yeah. Interesting. So you just had added so much value to his business. It opened up a job opportunity for you.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good lesson. Cool. So you got your broker's license. When you started Real Wealth, who was your audience, and then how did you help them create wealth for themselves? Because it's one thing to do it for yourself, and then it's another thing to then replicate that so someone else can do it. So what was the strategy and the focus?
Well, again, going back to that time 20 years ago, it was really desperation, and it was really a little bit more self-serving. I'm just being honest. I didn't know what to do, if the doctor was right. So I just wanted to learn, and I was a sponge. Well, in that process, it just so happened that my learning was very public because it was on radio.
Right.
And I got to learn the things that were hidden from the public. And I made it very public, like how to fix your credit. Who knew that was even a thing? Some people thought if you have bad credit, you have bad credit. Well, it turns out there's ways to fix it. I learned about borrowing money, and a lot of people who aren't in real estate don't understand kind of how that works and what a wealth building tool that is. So of course, when I became a mortgage broker and learned all the ins and outs, that helped too. So for me, it was like this whole new world I was discovering, and my audience was discovering it with me. And so I'd like to say that it was benevolent of me, but it really was benevolent to me because I wanted to help my family.
Yeah. Right? But I think that's so much of people's success that is now benefiting other people is born out of, it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? You have to look and you have to meet your needs, you know? So there's that struggle, that wrestle. And that's the beauty of capitalism, is that you can go out and take control of your situation and find a solution. And then I think there's a crossroads moment. Do I hoard this to myself or do I share this with other people? And it sounds like you had elected to, you know, try and do this for other people. And obviously, when you're solving someone's problem, you get compensated for that.
It was a process of learning that there are people out there that think differently, that wealthy people really do think differently. They were generous. They were caring. They didn't want to charge anything. And it was at that time that I think that was the turning moment for me, the turning point of, wow, all these real estate groups are not telling the truth and they're selling stuff that's garbage. Here I am learning the truth. How about we just do that? How about we just be honest and offer a good product?
So what a novel idea.
What a concept, you know? Yeah. And that's how easy business can be, is if you could see the need and kind of see what else is out there. And so many times companies aren't honest and aren't offering a great product and don't care. If you can just do that, you know, just do that, you'll be successful.
It already sets you apart.
I think, you know, and Seth and I, we've struggled with this. It's kind of a constant tension, especially when you're starting out in real estate. Comparison is like the worst trap because and it stacks, it's two sides of the same coin. So on one side of the coin, you're looking at someone who's further than you, and you feel envious to get there faster, you know, to follow that, to model or mimic that, even if that's not kind of true to who you are. Or you look to somebody who's kind of underneath of you and you're like, you feel a sense of pride that, you know, you're not there. And either way, comparison's a losing battle, but you feel this pressure to maybe cut corners or to buy into someone else's strategy that might not be altruistic.
it's hard to put faith in the system that if I really help somebody get to where they're going, that it's going to help get me where I want to go too. But it sounds like you guys were able to do that. So what was the strategy that you were actually employing to help people create wealth for themselves?
Really, in the beginning, it was more of an effort to destroy that which was not serving. I don't know how else to say it, but as I was starting to talk about wealth and wanting to learn wealth, I started to get asked to speak at different real estate groups. And I would sit in the audience and just be like, oh, I know they're not, they're not being honest here. They're just trying to sell product. So it was more of a, I'm going to offer something better and put these guys out of business kind of. I guess it was that motivation. And I didn't really have a product or a way to monetize it. I just wanted to do what was right. And then that's when my co-host and sponsor offered that job to me. And then I did have something to promote. It was mortgages. But then in the mortgage world, I walked into a whole nother trap of people lying. You know, it was unbelievable. I was watching people left and right just lie to clients or have their clients lie.
So when was this in terms of like 2000?
It was 2004 to 2007, you know, the peak of the mortgage
crisis. The subprime era.
Yeah, I just came in the middle of everybody lying.
Wow.
Between the banks and the mortgage brokers and even the clients lying on their applications. It was just like, wow, is this the way the world does business? I was shocked. And I thought, again, I'm going to be the person who doesn't do that. Yeah. I'm going to tell my clients how I make money. I mean, there were mortgage, I'm sure at the time, people didn't know that a mortgage broker got this, you know, these points on the back end. And so if you give somebody a higher interest rate, the mortgage broker would make more money.
Right.
You know, but they didn't tell you that. So you really had to shop your loans. And I think the law has changed since then and they have to disclose what they're making. But I would just disclose it. I'd be like, hey, if you get this interest rate, you know, I'm going to make more money, but I can, you know, maybe credit some of it back to you or whatever. I was just honest. Mm-hmm. And then I would be honest about this. You can't afford this loan. You know, this is going to adjust and you're not going to be able to afford it. I can't give you this loan. Now, they would probably go to the mortgage broker next door and get that loan because they could. But at least I was representing somebody they could trust in the future, you know, if they weren't going to work with me.
So let me ask you this question. You saw some of the slimy nature of real estate investing, even some of just the deception going on in that whole industry, lending, you know, people who are selling a product. Do you still see that going on today or have things changed?
Oh, there's always snakes, but kind of coming back to the information age that we're in, it's exposed a lot more quickly, I think. Mm-hmm. The problem with the information age is that there's sometimes too much and you don't know who's telling the truth and who's not. And, you know, is it an ad? Is it real? I mean, it's kind of like you're in a masquerade party all the time now with information. don't know what's real. I'd say that's the bigger challenge today.
Yeah. And I think, you know, along with that is, has something been out long enough to really see if, has it been a tested idea? And, you know, things come out and things can hit the mainstream very quickly.
Well, and with things being virtual and through a screen and social media and YouTube, you can really make yourself look a lot better than you are.
I mean, we'll Zoom call with people, and I don't even know if that's your house right now. You know,
it's true.
I'm sure it is.
This is real back here. I do have a little bit of a filter on my Zoom. I'm gonna say.
I would know, none the wiser.
But it's so easy now for people, for the YouTube gurus and people to really make themselves sound more successful or better than they are. To try to grab your attention, subscribe and
make $6,000, $10,000 in passive income in 120 days. And, you know, just for our listeners to know this too, people like Kathy, the guests that we interview, again and again, it is this. This is the message. There are no shortcuts to success. You do the right thing long enough and you will be successful. And it's like, stop trying to fight it, embrace that, and then actually be actionable on those things that are going to move you there.
Yeah.
So one of the things, you know, going back, contrasting, okay,
people are scared right now. Maybe scared is an overstatement. People are nervous. Sometimes you don't even know what you don't know. So for somebody who's been through a market cycle, two market cycles, what do you see now? And if you want to contrast that to past market cycles, awesome. But what do you see right now that people need to be mindful of as they invest?
Yeah, sure. Well, we know that a year ago, the Fed started tightening. Raising rates means that they're making money more expensive with the intent to slow down the economy. And they're still at it. So there's been a lot of confusion about what's happening and will there be a big massive recession and will there be a housing crash and commercial real estate crash? And the bottom line is we actually don't know. We're in a place of not knowing because a lot of it's out of our control. So I know that may not be the message you wanted to hear, but it's just a fact that right now we have the powers that be are trying to take some of the money out of the economy that they overshot before. Right. Between 2020 and 2022, there was more money in circulation as the amount of new money in circulation during 2020 to 2022 in that 2-year period was the entire amount of money in circulation in 2007.
That's, if you can even wild.
Grasp yeah,
that's
that.
Hard to imagine.
And it was about 40 to 50% increase in that amount of time. So much money circulating at a time when businesses were shut down. Mm-hmm. Well, the result of something like that is inflation. The definition of inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. Mm-hmm. So an enormous amount of money creation while businesses were shut down and the goods weren't there. So what were they thinking? Nobody knows, but then right. They had to pull that back. And the way they pulled that money back out, they sucked that money back out of the system is by making it too expensive, raising rates. So if you look at just a quick comparison would be 2 years ago, you might have said, you know what? I want a new car. My car's okay, but I want a new car and I can get 1% interest rate on it. And my payment's going to be $500 a month. I can afford that. Now you go to buy that same car today and it might be $1,000 a month and you might not buy that car. Now what's happened in that one decision of you not buying that car is the salesperson didn't get a sale. The car company didn't get the sale. The stocks went down and that money wasn't created because to get that car loan, it's just created. It's just the money's created, but it didn't get created because you didn't buy the car. It's the same with housing, right? You could buy that house 2 years ago, and today it's twice as expensive in terms of the payment.
Right.
So the Fed is not there. They haven't reached their goal. Their goal is to, if they basically said their goal is to get unemployment up over 4%. They haven't been able to do that in a year of raising rates 7 or 8, even 9 times
so
now. Wow.
I know, it's so
they
hikes.
Haven't been successful. In fact, this last month, the jobs report, unemployment went down again. So that means we're probably going to see another rate hike at the next meeting, and they're going to keep at it until they break the job sector. That's what they want to see.
Which is really interesting. I mean, at the time that this is going to release, some of this is going to be a little bit old, but before they're really in a tight spot because of some of what's happened in the regional banking realm, So it's like, people are up in the air about if they're going to do another rate hike for the fallout that might happen on some of these banks that we've already seen. So what are, like, when things get tough like this, when there's unknown about, what's, never catch a falling knife, you don't know if that's the kind of the scenario.
Yeah.
What are the fundamentals that you rely on in a market correction moving forward that maybe some of our listeners could also employ?
I'd like to say that it's something really new and creative, but honestly, it's the same thing I do in any kind of market, whether it's an up market or a down market, it's literally the same thing I look at, which is where are things working? So where the three biggest things are, where are the jobs going? Where are people going? And where are cities investing in themselves? Mm-hmm. So job growth, population growth, infrastructure growth. If you follow that, then the market cycles really aren't going to affect you as much. So that's really what I look at from a macro and economic perspective.
Yeah, right.
we have a single family rental fund that we're, you know, we still have open, and we're buying properties in North Dallas. If you go to North Dallas, you'll see a lot of the chip manufacturing jobs are going there mm-hmm. from the new CHIPS Act that Biden passed.
Yeah.
It was like $56 billion or something.
Yeah. Intel was one of those in Columbus. And then what's the other big company? I think they're down in Dallas, Fort Worth area.
And then I think outside of Phoenix and outside of Austin, there's
Thailand chip company or.
Yeah. A lot of chip manufacturing. So there's a lot of reshoring that's happening with that we learned over COVID. Wow. If we're really dependent on another nation for things that we really need and then everything gets shut down, we realize that's not good. Right. We're getting all our pharmaceuticals from other countries. And so there's a lot of reshoring happening and we, if we follow that and we follow where jobs are going, that will generally attract people. And then generally cities need to grow to keep up with all that growth. So in North Dallas, where we're focused on, at least for our single family rental fund, you're still seeing freeway expansions and cranes everywhere, building headquarters, and housing, of course, is needed. And yet it's very affordable. So I don't have any worries at all about that fund. And about the properties that we're acquiring, because they're in these growth areas, but they still cash flow. You know, they still very much cash flow, and we're still getting incredible discounts. In fact, if anything, this is the market we've been waiting for, because over the last 2 years, we had to fight with everybody to get anything. Yeah. You know, you had the institutional investors in, and you had, you know, first time home buyers and people buying second homes and third homes and the investors and all that, you know, so many people have backed off because they're scared or because they didn't have the reserves or they don't know what's next. So we're the only ones at the closing table. We're all, only ones, you know, making the bid. This is great. This is great for us.
Now we had an investor that, was actively buying single family homes in like 2009, 10. And, right on the back end of the crash. And he made a comment. He's like, we got so tired of buying homes that we got tired of celebrating. You know what I mean? Because there was no competition. And like, we can't.
They were getting these killer deals.
Yeah, we can't comprehend no competition because it's like, you know, we're both full-time real estate agents. So everybody and their mama got their real estate license in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, it's like, well, sure, if I can make $30,000 on the side, why not? And they saw how frothy everything is. And then some of the seasoned agents in our area are like, they call it the purge. And it's like the time where things get so tight that you see who's going to endure through this next kind of correction. Yeah. And to your point, if you're an investor that's going to be here to stay, you're going to find a way to continue to invest in the market that is, but you just got to go back to the fundamentals, right? And it's easy to get lazy, I think, when things get really easy. But so here's a question. What would you tell your 25-year-old self? Now, not just about business. And the reason I want to open it up to outside of business as well is because we just recently listened to the episode that you were on Brandon Turner's podcast. And it was so beautiful to hear you and Rich talk about your family and the culture that you've tried to create that way. So, you know, this for us, real estate's kind of like the touch point, but we talk about all things related to life, mindset, spirituality, relationships, and business. So what would you tell your 25-year-old self?
Oh man, you know, I actually have a 24-year-old and she's turning 25. And
that's kind of like telling your 24-year-old self something. Yeah.
What would I tell her? I would say, you know, back then I was really challenged. I was, I think the 20s can be a confusing time. You're trying to figure out a lot of things, right? You're on your own. You know, in most cases, you're trying to create this career. You might be trying to work through a relationship. You might be heartbroken. Right. You might be starting a family. I mean, there's the 20s, in my opinion, are the most challenging because there's so much figuring out, but it's also very exciting. So looking back at my 25-year-old self, I was in a relationship where I wasn't really being honored. I was struggling is the best I can say it, trying to find myself. So I would just give her a big hug and tell her everything's going to be okay. the big turning point for me was when I did a personal development course. And that is when I met my current husband. And that was the big turning point again for me was being able to recognize that our thoughts, I think you said it at the very beginning of the show, our thoughts have power, our words have power. So when I would say things that were degrading to myself, those words have power that would affect me. You know, and so all I really had to do was change those words. And I know that sounds so silly, but it really is the difference. Yeah. It's the difference. Change those words. Say nice things to yourself. You know, it was fortunately I was a single mom and that baby woke me up because
like in the middle of the night.
I'm just kidding. All the time. All the time. She woke me up. No, actually, she was a really good sleeper. But I cared more about her well-being than mine, you know, and that kind of pulled me out of a bad situation because I wanted something good for her. It took a little while for me to want something good for me.
Interesting.
Know?
Yeah. Like there's a lot there, right? Because it's more blessed to give than receive. So as you're giving sacrificially for a child, just the fact that someone's depending on you kind of gets you out of self-wallowing and self-pity.
Yes.
I think eventually you have to come back around and say, I have to be healthy if I want to be healthy for other people.
So yes.
It sounds like it kind of led you out of that and then reinforced the importance for you to be growing.
Yeah. And just again, the power of intention, the power of thought and words, and just to never, you know, not say negative words are just not useful, right? It's just not.
Yeah.
If you're talking bad about yourself or others, it's just bad energy. So talking others up and talking yourself up in a way that is supportive and intentional and like, this is where I want to go. Yeah. I found over the years, and this was the case for me, a lot of people don't even know how to dream. They don't know how to imagine a life that they would love. So it really starts there, imagining that dream life and then allowing yourself to accept that as a possibility and then start speaking towards that.
You know, my wife and I have a lot of really great conversations. I know Seth is the same way. We lean into our lives, into our wives to get perspective. And as men, it can be hard. I think you can hear like that advice of like, hey, you got to have positive words to yourself. It's easy to interpret that as like fluffy mumbo jumbo. But the older that I get, the more self-awareness that I gain, which is small. Seth's laughing because I put myself in a situation where someone asked me if I thought I was self-aware, and I answered that question in front of my wife, and I was wrong according to her standards.
She was like, are you sure you're self-aware?
Oh, I thought it was until about 30 seconds ago. So, but like as we grow, my wife helps me understand the inner voice that I do have. And I've realized over the last 2 years, I have a lot of insecurities because of those voices, those inner scripts that we play. And it's easy for those to go unidentified, you know? So this is just a personal question. Have you gotten better at catching those voices when you hear them, identifying them? Because when you're inside of yourself, it's just hard.
I can tell you from my experience, everybody has them, no matter how successful. I hang out with some of the most successful people in the world, even, and they still have those negative voices. So they don't ever leave. But I think you're right. The recognizing them is the key. I have done a lot of work with Rich and with friends on becoming more self-aware. There, we did we met at a workshop where you would play games. You know, sometimes when people play games, then there's this other side that comes out. It's like, whoa, who's that? You know, like really competitive, or like they get angry, or they, you know, whatever. They have weird reactions. It's through games a lot of times that we could learn things. So in some of the self-development courses we would take, it would be like, whoa, how were you being in that exercise, you know?
And you never think they're connected. Like, I don't know about me. It's like, don't read into that. That was unrelated. No, that was probably deeper. There's something deeper there. So,
or the way you act with your team or your employees or your kids. I mean, your kids for sure will bring up all the voices.
Yeah, for sure.
Everything you haven't worked through. You know, here I am almost 60 in next year and I still am learning, you know, still learning what are these voices, because I think every phase of life you are, it's like a video game where you got really good at level one and now you're on level two and you're starting over. It's like, oh my gosh, yeah. I thought I was good at this game. You know, by the time you get to my age, you're on level six and it's even more intense and there's even more to learn. So the learning never ends.
Yeah.
But one of the things I think for me and for Rich and I, that it's like slowing down, taking breaths, breathing before speaking or reacting. I think reacting is where most people, you know, make mistakes. Even just this last weekend, my daughter and her husband got in a fight and I wanted to be mama bear and just like give her husband give a piece of my mind, you know? And it was like, just breathe, let them work through it. This is like, people have arguments. It's normal. Right. It's up to her to work through it and have the discussion with him. It's not her mama that needs to do that. And I told her, I'm like, holding back, honey, but I want to send them a text. Later, she was like, Mom, thanks so much for staying out of it. We worked it out. Wow. Everything's great.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I've got four girls. I plan to do a lot of reacting, so.
It takes a lot to let them handle their own issues, right?
That's good.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. We're going to jump into our next show segment here, our Smaller Pockets segment.
Smaller pockets.
Yeah. Smaller pockets. So go ahead and maybe share with us one of your worst real estate deals and what happened, what went wrong, and then most importantly, what did you learn from it so us and our audience can avoid it?
Sure. Well, since you have a multifamily audience, I'll use a multifamily example. How's that?
That's perfect.
Yeah. Okay. So I was afraid of multifamily because early in my career, I had met a man who lost everything in multifamily and he was a really smart guy and had studied it. And when he kind of explained how just obviously over the last few years, how gains can be so dramatic,
right?
But when things change, losses can be just as dramatic. And that's what I saw. There was a market shift and the value changes so quickly in that circumstance, like we're seeing now. If rates go up, whoa, that really affects the value. If rents growth slows down, it really affects the value. So I was always really scared of multifamily because of that. And because single family just seemed so simple. You know, you just buy a property, you get in a fixed rate loan, and you make sure you're in the path of progress, and you make sure you're taking care of your tenant. And it just, to me, was really easy.
Yeah.
So anyway, somebody brought me a multifamily deal and I was like, you know what? It's time for me to grow up. This was 2014, I think. Great timing, by the way. I mean, if I had just stuck with it.
Yeah. I know. Great, you're kind of like, that's the regret now.
Exactly. But, you know, so I had an intern. This was so funny. It was some guy who that listened to The Real Wealth Show, was a fan, and he called and said, I would like to be an intern. I'll work for you for free. That, by the way, this is a great way to get in with people. He's like, I would love to help you in any way, even if it's just bringing you coffee. It's like, okay. This guy showed up in a business suit from 9 to 5 every single day for 6 months.
Wow. And I didn't pay him. What a guy.
What a guy. And he was a former CPA. He'd been laid off during the recession. And so he was a really great analyst. He had owned multifamily. So I said, great. Well, while you're here interning, can you analyze this multifamily deal that was just brought to me?
And get me a coffee.
And get me some coffee while you're at it. And I love the suit, by the way. No, it was so sweet. I did end up hiring him, by the way. I'm not that mean.
Good, but he's nice. There we go.
For 6 months. Great. So he's, you know, analyzing it and kind of talking the pros and cons of this deal. And with the concerns he had, I was like, oh, we can overcome those concerns. I'm not worried about it. Let's do it. What the mistake I made is really not listening more carefully to his concerns. Mm. One was that this building was vacant because there had been a gas leak and that gas leak had to be fixed. But because of it, the city required that everybody move out. So he's like, wow, you know, you're taking on an asset that's not cash flowing at all. It's like, but yeah, we're getting a good deal on it. It was a little bit too far outside of Indianapolis. It was in Anderson, Indiana.
Yeah.
But I saw the upside. All I was seeing was the optimism and the upside. It was near a college that was expanding. The city was saying that they were going to infill part of the area. And it was very, I don't know if you know about this in Anderson, I don't think it ever happened, but there was talk of turning part of the city into a reservoir for Indianapolis. So it would have made it was really cool. And I went to the city to be sure, like, are you really thinking this? Yeah, yeah, we're really talking about it. This would have made this apartment nearly lakefront. I'm, you know, like, wow. Whoa, okay, okay, that's cool. There were just a lot of positives. So I ignored his concerns and we went for it. I was able to raise the money really quickly because I, you know, was a well-known podcaster by then. And unfortunately, because the building was vacant, the city was really nervous about
reopening
any more liability. Yeah. Wow. So they came in and tore the place apart and made sure with it. They had us do so much more CapEx than we were planning and budgeted for.
And what's unfortunate about that is the city, there's always a disconnect between private and public. They don't view money the same. Like when it's,
at all.
You know what I mean? They'll be like, well, hey, no, you need to actually rerun the gas line from here. And it doesn't make economical sense. And by the way, you're paying for it.
And you're paying for it. And then they wanted new water pipes and, you know, it's just really challenging. It ended up costing millions more than we had anticipated.
Wow.
So we didn't have the reserves. We didn't have the income. They wouldn't give us the CO, you know, because it was empty. They wouldn't allow us to move anybody in and like help with the overhead. I learned a lot of lessons on this deal. I went to the bank and said, you know, after hiring legal and so many advisors and like, oh, I knew multifamily would stink. You know? I finally was like, okay, I went to the bank and said, you can have this back. This is yours. And they're like, no, we don't want it back. And they're like, we'll lower the loan. They took a few million off the loan. Like, you know, so that helped.
Wow.
It was a lot of learning. We finally just sold it as is. I was able to give back 60% of investor capital. So they lost 40%. I promised those investors I'd find a way to put them in another deal that would make their money back, which I did. But it was brutal. And so the big lessons are not having enough reserves, buying a building that's empty. That's like buying land. You don't have any cash flow to get you through the tough time.
So,
and also learning that banks can be flexible because they don't necessarily want the asset back. So, you know,
right. Yeah, that's interesting. They're like, no, please.
No.
And if you like, you should finish this.
Yeah. That's what, and we're like, okay, well, fine. But you got to reduce the loan. They did.
And the other lesson, if you have an intern that's going to wear a suit and work for free for 6 months, so that's a former CPA, take a hard look at what he's trying to say. And, you know, it's funny. Seth and I were interns for a long time, so we get the whole intern thing.
Yeah. We did the intern gig. So
awesome.
It's a great way because people will call and say, hey, can I pick your brain, take you to lunch? No.
the proverbial pick your brain.
I need my whole brain. I don't need a pick. But also, you know, busy people don't have time to give free lunch advice. You know, a better way is what this guy did is like, can I just help you? How can I help you? How can I follow you around and just be there to help you. That's the best way to get in with a company that you'd like to maybe work with.
Here's the irony. The irony is it's more advantageous for somebody to follow you around and help you for free for 6 months than have an hour of your time over lunch. So
totally.
It's like more advantageous even for the person that wants to learn from you to do the intern route. So by the way, Seth and I, we would take interns on if you want to do that. But.
And for sure. And especially if you got laid off and you're on unemployment, you know, I think that was the case for him.
Yeah.
So, you know,
pay to do it. Yeah. It's like, I'll work for you for free. Actually, don't pay me because I need my
Please don't pay me.
Yeah. That's funny. Well, we're going to go to our little nugget. So Kathy, what's one practical takeaway, piece of advice, could be a hack, just a tried and true principle that our audience could implement to their businesses?
I would say that one of the big shifts for us was using the EOS system, but also then using, do you know what that is? Entrepreneur
Traction?
Operating
system. Are you talking about Traction or a different type of
Traction? Yeah. Talking about Traction.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. EOS has, EOS implementers that can help you implement that system.
So and you did the consultant route, actually brought somebody in.
We did. So they would run our quarterly meetings and our annual meetings, the planning sessions. And then our guy put us on this software called 90.io, 90 spelled out, .io. And it's an incredibly effective way to have your weekly meetings where people like me who have big ideas and are the visionary for the company, these entrepreneurial types can really drive the rest of the company crazy because we have new ideas all the time. So they're the operations people are like, ah, you have a new idea. I'm just trying to get yesterday's idea implemented. Well, with the 90.io software, those wonderful ideas that I may have, they don't get lost. I put them in the system, but then we have a way to make sure that the team can handle one more idea. And if they can't, then it goes in the next quarterly session. We're going to talk about it in 3 months, but we're going to get this stuff done first. So for a visionary, that process really helps. So I'm not mad at them. I'm like, what do you mean you can't do my newest idea? It's like, okay, they'll be like, well, either we need to remove something that we were doing to, or you need to hire people, or we need to do it next quarter. You know, so it's not a no, it's a not now.
It gives you the structure to be able to communicate about it with everybody in a way that feels safe and can totally relate to that. Because otherwise it sends people on a tailspin. Like you see their eyes cross.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah, they call it whiplash in EOS. It's just like your team is just like, ah.
Yeah. So, and you think as a visionary, they can always take a little more. They can always take a little more. And so you don't know when you're kind of pressing that threshold.
And you don't really even know what they're doing. You don't know. Like an idea is really great. It's like all the work behind it. Oftentimes the boss doesn't even know how much work it is. So
there's a disconnect there.
The team needs to make sure that the boss knows what they're doing.
Right. Very good. Well, in closing here, as we kind of land the plane, what's been one of the greatest resources in your career?
Honestly, it's being a podcaster, I would say, being one of the first podcasters. But, you know, Brandon Turner started many, many years after me, and he started a new one recently.
Yeah, Brandon. Yeah. So there.
It's never too late. It's never too late. But for me, it was the podcast that just created such an enormous reach where I have investors from Australia and Canada and from all over the world. I have, you know, people bringing me deals from all over the world. So it's just a really great way to communicate. Again, coming back to when we were talking about technologies, I started with a radio show and my reach was San Francisco. When Rich took that show and uploaded it to podcasts, like the day that he got an announcement that there was such a thing, no one really knew what a podcast was. I went from having a San Francisco audience to an international audience.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing.
International superstar.
So podcasting for sure, just having a way to really reach people. However you do that, that really worked for me.
Well, an insider scoop for anybody that doesn't do a podcast, there is a selfish component to host a podcast because you get to interview some awesome people that you otherwise wouldn't have an opportunity. You know, just like if we had emailed you and said, Kathy, kind of pick your brain for an hour. You know, you're like, delete. You know what I mean? But like it gives you an opportunity because now, you know, you're able to share your story and have access to our audience and we can have access to you and grow together. That's the beauty of this community and how it's structured. But so on that note, what are some ways that our audience can follow Real Wealth, the Real Wealth Network, and your guys' continued success?
Realwealth.com is our website. It's free to join. You get lots of market data and investment counselors and all sorts of stuff. And then the Real Wealth Show, of course. And then my single family rental fund is growdevelopments.com.
Growdevelopments.com. Okay. Those links will be in the show notes. And then your podcast, is it weekly? Is it daily? Is it
My Real Wealth Show is weekly, and then I have the Real Estate News Podcast, which I try to do daily, but it's more like 3 or 4 times a week.
Was that one associated with Bigger Pockets?
No, that one is on the market. I'm on 3 podcasts now.
Forgot about that one. So awesome. So we can check those things out. But
yeah, that's a fun one. The Bigger Pockets one is with Dave Meyer, and it's all about either, you know, it's called On the Market. So it's what's going on in the market today different teams. And then the four co-hosts, we always talk about what we're up to.
Well, it's very clear that you have a heart to want to give back just through your generosity to do things like the podcasts and our show and speak. So, we've been super blessed to have you on today. And thank you so much.
Thanks, you guys. Love what you're doing.
Awesome. Blessings. Thank you.
As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.